Welcome to the One Wyoming Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Thorburn. You can follow me on X at @by_RyanThorburn. Make sure you check out all of my coverage of the Cowboys and Cowgirls at gowyo.com. Bookmark the Pokes Insider page there. I am pleased to be joined by recurring guest, Sundance Wicks, head men's basketball coach at Wyoming. Sunny, it's a little over 2 year anniversary of you being hired to this position. How are you feeling right now, 2 years in?
Ryan, that intro was scintillating. Let me tell you, man, I'm jacked up right now. Like, geez, Ryan, we got to get some more juice in here, man. Like, pump me up a little bit, Ryan. Get me going. Give me an intro here, man. We got to give the people what they want. All right. We're like a WWE intro style stuff from here on out. I mean, I'm just telling you, Ryan, like, we're going to get this thing going today. It's snowing outside, by the way. We're up here at 7,220 feet. That's right. Laradice, it's snowing in May for the third time this week. Unbelievable stuff.
So Sundance, we're going to get into your process here. Obviously, it's quite a deal with college basketball now as far as the season, the retention, the recruiting, the summer, and then it's rinse, repeat situation. But let's start with kind of your, this is kind of what you said at the end of the season, like year one, survive. Year two, progress. Year three, contend. So you're just over 2 years in. How are you feeling about your process and your design on getting Wyoming basketball back where it should be?
It's nice to have a blueprint, right, and an idea of where you want to go and how you want this thing to look like. I think a lot of coaches can sit up there and talk when they get introduced as a head coach, the hyperbole, right, like what we're going to do, how it's going to be. But to stick to a plan and to actually have a plan in place where you're sitting there going, all right, I understand the landscape we're in. I understand the financial situation we're in when it comes to rev share, NIL, all that. And that landscape has changed drastically, right? Just in the two-year span we've been here, going on year three now. To be at the point where we are to retain 50% of our production, have five guys coming back, be able to go out there and also recruit guys that not only just add value, but can impact winning, right? Just not look, you're not out there looking for a bunch of Robins. I mean, you're finding some guys who have some superpowers, some real playing ability, you know, and not just saying we're going to piece this all together. So going into year three, and we're talking about contending for championships in a new Mountain West, I mean, that's always been the goal. And I appreciate a lot of what Tom Berman's always said to us is, you know, it's been really hard to compete to win championships for any of our programs in the old Mountain West. And not saying it gets any easier as we move forward, but we are progressing now at a level, at a rapid rate, where I think fans are understanding and supporters of Wyoming understanding what it takes to win championships, to compete for championships, and how everybody has to kind of row in the same direction. And because we're in this situation right now that we have to retain 50% of our production, five guys that are awesome. I mean, you know, Neil Summers redshirted for us last year. We got Gavin, Uriah, KB, Nas coming back. We got three of the top 10 returners in the Mountain West coming back to play for Wyoming. If fans aren't excited about that alone, which we haven't had here in the last 3 or 4 years, that's a big, big deal, right? And so to be in this situation, it puts us on track, right? Not ahead or not behind of where we said we're going to be, but right on track. And now we just got to go out there and do the job. And I think that's a fun part about this. Every single year, you just get to focus on that year. And if we look at it in a silo and not try to look at it as, is it a 2 year span? Is it a 3 year span? Is it a 4 year cycle? No, it's a one year unrepeatable cycle. Like, you just have to adapt and pivot the way you have to every year to give yourself the best chance of a possible chance to compete. I think that's what we've done. I'm excited about where we are.
Before we get into the players that are coming back, I just want to make note, because I think it gets lost in the shuffle. I was just in your office picking you up for this podcast. Your staff is back intact, and there's just a real vibe amongst the group and a camaraderie amongst the group. That's got to be huge for you that all these guys are back this year that were on the staff last year.
It starts top down, right? And then it goes sideways. It's just top down and sideways accountability. Everybody's got each other's back. It's first time since I've been a head coach that we've had the same staff back-to-back years, which makes a lot. I mean, it's a huge difference, because our guys are already having film sessions with incoming players about cultural standards, the way we live, how we do our job here. They're watching videotape with incoming point guards. Like, Madden's been on a Zoom with C-Mac, and so has Parker, and so has Uriah. That stuff matters, just to be able to get ahead of the curve. But if you have to teach your staff what we're trying to do, you've got a brand new staff coming in, right? We're going to be teaching them just like we're going to be teaching new players. And so for us, the staff continuity was massive. And it also speaks to where we are, and we're in a great space right now, and everybody loves living in Laredice. I'm not saying it has to be the best place in the world for everybody to live, but you know, quite honestly, when your staff's not leaving, it must mean something good about the job. This must mean something good about the people you work with. Must be something good about the place you live, right? Must be something good about the style of play you're playing and the success you're having. And so those things matter for retention, not only in staff, but also in players.
You touched on the new world of college athletics. And, you know, one thing Jay Sauvel's done the last couple of years is he puts together, here's my top 10 list of guys I want back. And these are the guys we're going to target first. And I think it's fair to say all Wyoming fans that watched last year's team would have the four guys plus Big Honey, but definitely the four guys that played in their top five. How did you do it? How did you retain these guys?
I wish you could say there's like this magic formula, but I think one thing that we did, you know, kind of ahead of it all was we talked about making this a 2-year deal for a lot of guys and wanting it to be, you know, and then you got to approach it that way. You can't sit there and say, oh, we'll sell 4 years. I mean, we know how fast you can pivot on this stuff. There's been players that have had a lot of success outside of Wyoming that were here, right? We talk about Obi Agbum going to Baylor, obviously Demaryius Dennis going to Texas Tech. There'll be other guys in our program in the future that will move on. And we talk about making millionaires. That's part of the process, right? Like it's just, that's something that we have to compete against. And we're not trying to compete with, because that's out of our price range right there, out of our wheelhouse. But when we recruited Nas and Gavin, we talked about 2 years of development for you, really 2 years of development. And then when you get guys that are juniors, you know, Caden Bennett, Uriah Rojas, we want their two best years. We want them to be juniors and seniors and to graduate as Cowboys and to get their two best years of playing college basketball. And we talked about it on the front end. So you don't have to have these weird, awkward, like walk it back conversations at the end of the season. And everything can change. We understand that. But I think there's something to be said about young men keeping their word nowadays. And even if that's just for 2 years, that's a far cry from what it's been in the portal where guys are leaving every year. They're moving. They're jumping. They're going down the conveyor belt to the next stop. And for us to have that consistency and continuity, those are just fierce conversations that you have on the front end and then constant communication that you have with their people throughout the season, whether that's their AAU coaches or whether that's mom or dad or whether that's, you know, an agent. And we don't have a lot of guys who have a ton of agents right now. We have a lot of guys who are really in that developmental process but are being approached by a lot of agents. But I think these guys are smart right now in how they're handling their business. I mean, they've kept it in the family. Nas has kept it in the family. Gavin's kept it in the family. KB's kept it in the family. Uriah's kept it in the family. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying for those guys, that's mattered. That's mattered to us being able to retain players. And it's mattered for us to be able to have really fluid conversations that are transformational, not transactional. We can talk about their development and how much we care about them. And a lot of times when you just get on the phone and talk business, you know, it just becomes standing on business, whether it's a good deal or a bad deal, and not about how you feel or is your development right? Or do you like the place where you're at? Or you like how you're being coached? So it's a lot more fluid than you know, I want to just sit there and say, well, just because we have a great relationship, they're coming back. There's a lot of things that have to be in place. Gavin and Nas have to see a platform for them to develop into a better player next year. They have goals and aspirations to play at the highest level being professional basketball. Caden has to see a platform where he could come here and that we can still improve his game and he can grow and develop into a player who becomes a professional basketball player. And the same with Uriah. And we want Uriah to take a bigger step and have more of a bigger role in our offense and the way we play and more minutes, all those things. And he's been kicking butt this spring. So those things matter for guys to be able to stay here as well. And also when you retain that much of your roster, 50%, it can hurt you a little bit in trying to recruit players because they see competition at their spot. And there's a lot of players that run from the smoke nowadays. They run from their competition cluster. I'm sorry to say this, man, but no matter where you go and no matter what they're telling you in the United States of America, at any college basketball program, there are going to be people competing for your playing time at your spot. If you're not, they're screwing themselves. There's multiple players at every position that have to compete for playing time. And that's what it will be as you grow forward too. So learn to compete, learn to not mess with happy, and then we readjust and reevaluate at the end of every single year.
What's it going to be like to work with Gavin and Nas to make them make that jump from being two of the best freshmen in the Mountain West to two of the best players in the Mountain West?
Yeah, it's a big difference. I think they're still working through that as well when it comes to, you know, people classify freshmen as freshmen and they love saying, oh, well, they're really good freshmen. And so you get pitted in this pot of other freshmen in the league. But when you have, when you're now you're a sophomore, you're upperclassmen, quote unquote upperclassmen. Now you're in the category of sophomores, juniors, and seniors. So you may still be 19, 20 years old, but you got to be better than 23-year-olds. You got to be better than 24-year-olds. And that level of growth requires a certain amount of humility to know that just because you were a good freshman, just because you were a good freshman doesn't mean you're automatically going to become a great sophomore. There's going to be more expected of you. You're going to be counted on more. You're going to have to drive a lot more things in our program internally from a cultural standpoint, from a showing up every day and living it the right way standpoint. So that pressure is a privilege, but now they have to sit there and say, well, I'm an upperclassman. I'm pitted against every transfer. I'm pitted against every guy that returned in the league. I'm pitted against all those guys. And so they got to become better versions of themselves first. So our competition, the way we compete is you versus you. All right. You got to beat your best every single day. Then it's you versus us. You got to beat everybody in our program, whether that's in the weight room or on the floor. You got to show that you can go beat everybody in our program or be one of the best. And then it's us versus everybody else. That's our mentality. So when we train you versus you, you versus us, us versus everybody, we just keep repeating that cycle over and over again. But those guys are just going to have to take that step in maturity. And I think the two things that stop players from being great is immaturity and insecurity. I heard Phil Beckner say that down at, Driven Basketball and Be Better, Be Different. Talks about immaturity will stop you as a player because you just don't want to be coached harder. You think you got it all figured out, or you don't want to hear the hard things about your growth or development. And then insecurity, right? The immaturity is just like not believing it. And the insecurity is I don't want to face it, or I'm going to run from it, or I'm going to hide it, or I'm going to cloak it. And you can't fake it, man, when you're playing against good teams, and you can't fake it when you're playing against good players. And I think these guys have started to go down that path of reinventing who they're going to be next year in our program.
Caden Bennett brought some maturity to your team last year and really had some great moments. The Colorado State game in particular, where he was just a stone cold killer and seemed like he
legacy game.
Born for the border war. What's it going to be like to have him back as a leader and to end his college career as a Wyoming Cowboy?
Well, and Caden's going to have to take the biggest step from just an internal leadership standpoint. Like, we know how tough he is, toughest guy on a roster, leading returning rebounder for us, coming in the fold. We know all the winning things that he does, but we want him to take a bigger step just from how he's competing every single day, leading our guys, because we're going to, young guys, everybody coming to our program, we're going to really look at guys like Caden, Nas, and Gavin, Uriah. We can't have quiet guys as upperclassmen or vets in our program, because an upperclassman in our program could be Neil Summers, could be a redshirt freshman just because he's been in our program. He knows what to expect. We're going to classify him as an upperclassman. It's just because you've been a year in our program. You understand what we expect out of you. We understand the standards that we live by. You're going to have to show those every single day and act upon it every single day. So for Caden, I know he's going to be good basketball-wise, just who he is, man. His game could be the same no matter where he's at. He could be a pro in Germany. He could be a pro in the NBA. He could be college basketball. He's going to be the same player no matter where he goes, and he's going to impact winning at a high level. Now can he take that next step where he influences the locker room so that, what we want as a staff on our program is guys who will not let us lose, not players who will help us win. Every player always says, man, coach, I just want to win. Coach, I want to help you win. I understand that. But who's not going to let us lose? Who's going to do the things that make sure when it gets tight, when it's a crunch time or clutch time, up five or down five with five to go, or up five or down five with five to go in the first half, who's going to do the things that say, we're not losing today? And it couldn't be going right for us. It could be all wrong for us. But they say, those three guys band together and say, we're not losing. Not we're playing well and we're up 20 and we're winning, but who's not going to let us lose? That's going to be the biggest difference with KB next year.
What I liked about Uriah Rojas, he came up from junior college. Obviously, he had his struggles early in the year. You have to learn how to play defense at this level. You have to learn how to, just think at this level. But he got better as the season went on. He was the first guy where you dropped the video that he's coming back. And he has a chance to play more minutes and play more point, I assume, for you. What is it about Uriah that made him one of those guys you wanted back?
Just, when we love guys who want to be Cowboys, right? Like, that's the thing. And we wanted Uriah back because I felt like Uriah's best basketball is still ahead of him. And I really felt like if he would have went somewhere else, he would have had to do it all over again. his spring was fantastic. He probably had the best spring of anybody right now. Like I've just been really closely monitoring, like just, I think it takes a year to get your body right with Jimmy in the weight room. It really takes a year to adapt. And all of a sudden, then you start seeing the gains, you start seeing the cuts, you start seeing the movement patterns click in a little bit more. And your rise has been kicking butt this spring. And we're really asking him to be one of those high volume 3-point shooters. He's a great setup man. We know he can set it up in the pick and roll, but I really want him to start looking to trigger that shot, man. Him and Parker Garrett, I really want him to be able to catch and shoot, catch and fire, and be guys that are taking 5-6 3-point attempts a game because of their gravity. And that's really going to help us become a better team. But Uriah's going to be one of those guys where he can have explosive games. And he's had him at Chaffee College. You know, he's averaged 27.5 points a game. We need him to have some of those big offensive games. But also, his voice is really picked up. His leadership is really picked up. And I think that's the thing, man. Retention matters because the comfort you get to be able to speak up instead of walking into a locker room of unfamiliar faces. You walk into a place that you call home, that you know this is your space, that you've got blood in the bricks now, and you have credibility to confront anybody when it comes to our program. And I think Uriah has been taking a massive leadership step, great voice for us right now. He's kind of found his leadership style. And then just a guy who wants to be a Cowboy. Now, those videos that we're talking about, those videos, Ryan, those videos were so bad, they were good. All right, let's be honest. Like, I'm in a high-level Oscar-worthy actor over here. I've been nominated for 3, 4, or 5 awards here. Nick Siemens, you know, shaking his head right now. But I'm telling you, Ryan, like, that's high-level acting over there. When Nick Whitmore gets up there and, you know, he points down, look at that, when you see Caden Bennett, you know, like, what a scene. I mean, if you didn't get goosebumps watching that, when Nick Reynolds throws the cup across the film room. I mean, if you didn't just get on the edge of your seat and weren't just like, man, these guys, they can't only just coach, but they're high level actors as well. Thespians, if you will. I mean, just the best of the best.
Who gets the best supporting actor? I would give it to Jimmy for throwing the clipboard down.
When he breaks the clipboard. Like, so Grace, this is funny about Grace. Grace will look at me. The Gavin Gore is like, how serious? Dead serious. Like Grace will like look at me and she'll be like, dead, how serious? And I'll be like, dead serious. You know, I mean, these guys are just, they're ready. You're ready for the bright lights, you know, the silver screen over in Hollywood. We'll give a couple more years here for that.
So Neil Summers, very unique this day and age. You've got a Laramie kid who takes a red shirt. Not many guys are looking to redshirt these days, but you know, he's a big kid, scout team legend. Do you think he's ready to make an impact on this team yet, or does he have to have a big summer?
Absolutely. And I've told, I mean, I think this is the kind of the imposter syndrome you get when you're a Wyoming guy. It's like, do I deserve to be here? And even when we're recruiting him, I said, I'm not recruiting you because you're a Wyoming guy. Like, you're good enough. And I just got to keep helping Neil believe he's where he's meant to be. Like, he's good enough to play. He's going to play for us. How much is always determined upon how much he not only believes in himself, but how hard he works. And he has had an unbelievable offseason. He's been kicking butt, man. He came in at 6'9", 299, right? Just a pound under 300. And he's about 6'9", 265 right now. And he is like, he's a machine. Guys can't move him. Now, he's got to take that training that translates, and he's got to continue to believe in the work and trust the work and trust the process. But I've never seen a guy with better hands, better feet, better passing. You know, he's nimble. I mean, he's nimble. You're going to see some things that he does. Fans are just going to like, their jaw's going to drop. Well, you know, when you watch a really athletic guy like Gavin and you kind of get all excited, but it's equally as exciting when you watch a guy like Neil, who's got unbelievable feel, throw a behind the back pass or a pass across the court that you had no idea was there, but he saw it and nobody else did. And I have to allow the creative freedom and exploration for him to be able to make some mistakes early, because he can get guys open. And with his passing, they got to become better cutters. They got to be ready for it. Their guys are going to be hitting the face now. I mean, Varsity Blues, when like Johnny Moxon throws it at the mascot, all right, like guys are going to be hitting the face because they're not ready for some of the stuff that Neil does. And he makes every team he's on better because of his ability to connect and see it. Now, he's also going to have to be a weapon to score. And that's going to be, you know, his growth part is not just being a setup guy, but also being a guy like believes I can go to the basket and I can go make this happen. But he just, the amount of work that he's put in a year, that's a testament to Jimmy and his program. He's done it with everybody, with Garrett Spielman, who crushes it in the weight room. But Neil's going to be one of the strongest pound-for-pound guys in our program, and he's absolutely transformed who he is as a player and his body as well.
So 2 years ago at this time, you guys were mining the portal for whatever you could find in there. after being a late hire, you know, last hire of the portal cycle. Last year, you had more time to vet the portal and get ready, but you still showed up with double-digit new guys in the summer. How much of a head start with these five guys returning do you feel like you have on the season?
A huge head start, but I just think it's the idea of, you know, when you have nobody on your roster, it's an incomplete puzzle. And those puzzles, you know, when you get those 1,000-piece puzzles, they're absolutely really hard. Just to get the first couple pieces is impossible, right? That's what feels so daunting, is when you're saying, like, who's going to be the first piece? Who's going to be the first puzzle piece that he puts together? And all of a sudden, you can start to see the picture formulating. But when you have half the puzzle put together, and then you can just decide, like, oh, I'm going to put this piece here, and I'm going to put this that piece there. We knew that we had to go out and get a good big guy, you know, to complement Neil and Gavin and have some guys that could play both ways. And when it comes to 4-5, 5-4. And so the Linus Roof kid is going to be great from Germany. He's going to be an outstanding piece of the puzzle. And we knew that we could go get that. That would really complement who we are going to be. And every single player, when it came to Michael Mora, knowing early on, like, Michael Mora is going to be a steal from the D2 universe for us to be able to know that he's going to impact winning at a high level. Tough-minded winner, high-character kid, like, can score at three levels and also has a physicality about him that matters, right? So you start to put those pieces of Parker Garrett's. Well, people won't be wowed at his stats from Washington State. We recruited him out of high school. I knew exactly the type of kid he was, the type of human he was, type of leader he was. And he's going to be a guy who just, man, he rides for the brand. And just we could fit that piece together. That we could put it in the puzzle and say, that makes sense. Versus, let's just build this brand new puzzle and see what happens. And that was a little bit of last year. We just kind of had to feel it out. Like, we didn't know what was actually going to work out for us. And honestly, we finally got to that small ball lineup by default because of some injuries. And that was like our most efficient offensive and defensive net rating, offensive rating lineup for a year. And that didn't come till after playing Utah State, you know, when we were down guys. I remember Calhoun calling us and being like, "And you should stick with that lineup." Like, I love Calhoun. He's always been a good friend of mine and a good mentor. Loves to talk hoops. And he's sharp as well. I mean, he's at Cincinnati for a reason, right? He's done a great job at Utah State, and now he's going to go with the Bearcats. But he always, what I appreciate about him, he'd just call you, and he'd give you flowers, or he'd tell you, like, something that worked that he liked or didn't, you know? And, like, a lot of coaches don't want to call and give their opinion about things because, you know, we're all secret scientists over here. We got the recipe that nobody else has. But he said, like, your small ball lineup was really hard for us to guard, and they were a good team. And when it's hard for them to guard, he's like, I think you should roll with that for a little bit. And we doubled down on it, and, you know, we had a really good end of the season last year because of that.
So four of the incoming transfers are 6'8 or above, and you mentioned Roof, 6'11. His YouTube highlights are outstanding. How do you see him fitting in at the college level immediately? Is there a lot of work to do, or is he pretty polished and ready to go?
They run exactly the same. He was in the exact same amount of ball screens that our bigs have been in the last 2 years when it comes to playing out of the role man or pick and rolls, including, you know, passes. Like, he's designed for our system, which is what really intrigued me about him, was watching him play through the short roll or play out of the long, you know, short to long, you know, play out of the mid post or the pinch post and get to the next out of flow. So he's ready. I mean, he's playing against players that a lot of times are better players over there than are over here right now. You know, I think we invented the game over here, but there's some really good players and there's really good league over there in Germany that he's playing in. So he's playing against really good guys. He's going to be ready to rock and roll when he gets in here. And same with all of our guys. I mean, some of our transfers, like Reynars. Like, Reynars, he played a small ball five at Monroe, but he's really a natural four. He can really trigger it. I mean, he can shoot that thing now. He came in on a visit. I remember just, like, on the visit, he's out there just straight up stroking it, man. I'm like, this guy can really shoot it. It's one thing to see it on film. It's another thing to see it in person, right? So you just, when you're starting to nail in on those guys, you're going, all right, they fit and they work for a reason. And now he doesn't have to be a 6'9", 5-man. He can be a 6'9", 4-man, which helps us level up every position size-wise. Because we want to be one of the bigger teams in the league, one of the more physical teams in the league, and then double down on our rebounding presence and prowess that we had last year, being the best offensive rebounding team in the league, even though we were the smallest. I mean, it's the most offensive rebounds we've had since 1999 at Wyoming basketball. That's 99. Think about that. The smallest team in the league last year had the most offensive rebounds since 1999. Now, that also means we didn't shoot the ball from three at a high level like we wanted it to. So more misses mean more available opportunities, but all that stuff goes hand in hand.
So how does your godson fit into all this, Madden Smiley?
I mean, he fits in because he's a good, damn good player. Yeah,
he had a great prep career in Colorado.
Like, he helped Windsor win games in, you know, you talk about hadn't won since like 125 years ago. It'd be like 125 years since they won a state championship, or 100 years. And he was one to help win that. And then to go back to the Final Four, I mean, he just knows how to win. And then there's a bonus to being coached, you know, at home a little bit too, when he wants to be, because his dad and my best friend Steve does a great job of saying, do you want dad or do you want, you know, coach? Because I can give you both. And so their relationship, I think I learned a lot about watching them as a father and son. And I think making the decision to say, like, I'm not going to play for you, that instead of being, you know, convoluted and like his decision of like, oh, should I do it or not, or torn in that decision, like making that decision early, say, I'm not going to play for you, allowed him to explore all these opportunities. And we had recruited him for a long time. And there's a bonus to knowing him since he's my godson, but also I'm not going to recruit you if you're not good enough, period. So the fact of the matter is he's a 5A player of the year, 2-time, right? He's good enough and he grows. So the bonus to recruiting guys that are young is that you recruit him as a sophomore and he's 6'2", 6'3". And all of a sudden he walks in and he's 6'4". You know, he hasn't been done growing yet. That's the bonus of recruiting high school kids, when you can still watch him mature and grow through this process.
Where do you see him fitting in, you know, position-wise?
He could play one, he could play two, he could play three. Like, he just knows how to connect. He could play any position. And, you know, we run a four-guard offense anyways, or four-guard, yeah, four-out, you know, one in, or sometimes five out. And so the positionless side matters. But what I know is he can read ball screens. He can play off of closeouts. He can defend multiple positions. He can rebound. Right. And that's the mark of a good player. It's not how versatile you are offensively, but can you guard multiple positions defensively? He's going to come in more ready to defend than most freshmen, just because I think of what he's seen from his dad's team and his dad's program down in Northern Colorado and being around that. Like, just the terminology matters. How fast you can process on the floor matters, because you've seen and heard that. He watches film with his dad on his own, on the Northern Colorado team. So he's been in like college film sessions and one-on-one film sessions with his dad on the couch at home, where he's going to have a head start on everybody else. He's going to find a way on the floor, because he's a winner. That's what winners do.
Obviously, your time at Green Bay, you were able to get an early look at Gavin Gores and start that recruiting process ahead of time. You have another Wisconsin kid coming in, Chris Pohl. Is that a similar thing, where you have a great relationship with him and he can play at the Mountain West level?
Well, just and Toby, their AAU coach, you know, and their AAU program, like, just you start to develop a relationship with programs that, you know, they're friendly for you and it matters. And once you do right by one kid, it helps you do right by another. And we just try to be overly transparent in the process. But Chris is a 6'7", 6'8" swing wing. I mean, he could go three, he could go four, you know, he could multiple positions. And then once we get, you know, his ability, the thing I want to watch is, just like Gavin, it's small town Wisconsin is defensively, are you ready to defend at this level? Because he can flat out shoot it now. And he's changed and worked on his body a ton. But he's one of those guys where you, like, pictures, you've seen him from sophomore in high school to, like, when you see him after his freshman year, you're going to see this transformation of a big-time body. And that's going to be able to really help him at this level. His positional size is amazing. But one thing we focused on a ton was shooting. I just thought we needed to shoot more this year. We need to shoot more threes. We need to make more threes. But we just didn't have guys who really were confident enough shooting high volume from outside. We're really doubling down on shooting being the separator and having a lot of gravity out there so the driving lanes can open for us to make plays. And any single one of these guys you're talking about, not one of them have I like, just, I don't know. You might be a roadblock. None of these guys are roadblocks. They can all shoot the crap out of it.
How do you think it'll all fit together? You have June, July, August, September, October. Sounds like a lot of time, but pretty soon you're going to be playing at Chapel Hill, North Carolina before you know it.
I could never tell you how it's going to fit together right now. I got to watch these guys come together. I got to see them compete against each other. The one thing we're not going to have is we're not going to have this huge, you know, storming phase, sociological aspects here, right? Forming, storming, norming, performing. Like, we've formed a team, you know, and then there's that storming phase where everybody wants to alpha up and show, like, I'm the man, you know. But when you got guys that are coming back that know what their role is and who they are, right? Like, there's going to be less of that storming phase and more of the norming phase. So we're going to spend a lot of time getting guys comfortable with understanding who they are, each other. We're going to go to our team retreat, you know, J Foundation team retreat. And that 3 or 4 days, just with, we haven't done that in our program, haven't had the chance to do that in our program. We're going to be able to do that now. I think that's going to be an accelerator for us to be connected. And that's a huge deal for us to get these guys in the mountains, you know, radically detached. Because here's the thing, we're radically detached now. Like, we're going to have to radically detach from our phones. They're not going to be able to get them all day until maybe later at the night. I want them to disconnect because I want them to connect with each other. And when I say radically detached, we got to think about this generation of kids. They've never grown up without like a device in their hands. I grew up, you know, and some of you guys in here, I'm looking at old Nick Seaman over here. He didn't have a cell phone. I mean, I got an Alltel wireless phone at 19. Alltel wireless. All right, let's go back and a little slide phone, a slider. Right. That was the first phone at 19 years old. So I grew up my entire like childhood, you know, and young adult life without a phone or without something to hold my hands, an iPad. And these guys have always had it. So it's radically detached for a reason, because you have to take something from them that is like a pacifier for them, or at least gives them comfort. And you have to say, get rid of this, because we got a mission that we got to focus on. And that's our team right now and how connected we can become.
So I think you touched on all of the players that are official, except for Micah Curtis, transfer from North Dakota. What did it mean to get him and then to maybe have a sigh of relief that it was over?
Well, Micah and Mattia DeMartin, yeah, the old town stallion over there, Mattia DeMartin. Mattia, what I think he was a steal for us. I talk about Mattia, 6'8" guy who could play 1, 2, 3, or 4. Ultimate connector, unbelievable shooter. But like probably his best weapon is passing, right? A lot of feel like Neil can really see it. Great positional size. And so you got two guys that are both 6'8", Mattia and Micah, right? One is vastly different than the other. Mattia, you could play at point. Micah could be a 4 that you could play a 5. And just because he's super physical and had a rough go at North Dakota because of his back. And so got that medical redshirt, or we'll get that medical redshirt. And who knows if you even need that now with the up to 5 rule that might be changing here in a second. But Micah, what I love about him is like just unbelievable character. Like he walks in a room, he lights, you light up because he's smiling. He's got a smile on his face. And I think in that process, what mattered to me was finding that last spot of a guy who's really appreciative of the opportunity, but also had something to prove, right? And I like finding guys, Scotty Hatterberg playing first base, you know, how hard is it to play first base? Tell him, Wash, it's not that hard. It's extremely hard, right? Like Moneyball analogy there. It's extremely hard to go through this process when everybody wants success right away. And his brother Marley played it at North Dakota, you know, and Micah had to sit there and, you know, go through it that year without being able to contribute. And no one probably could have impacted winning. And so he comes in with a chip on his shoulder, but also a level of gratitude that matters to me, like that he wants to prove to everybody, hey, look, prove those that believe in you right. And I have a great relationship with Sather, obviously at North Dakota. You know, I haven't played for him and coached with him. And Paul spoke nothing but superlatives of Micah. And he's just a guy you're going to love him, man. Like, he wanted the cowboy hat on the pitchers. I love all the guys that came in here. Like, give me a cowboy hat. First of all, you could know when a guy he had no idea how to put the cowboy hat on, whether it's forward or backwards, right? So you know when a guy's never been in the country, when they come put that cowboy hat on, it's backwards. Like, yeah, turn that around, big boy. And he's a high-level character human, man. He's going to be fun to coach. He's going to be one of those guys where, if you think about it, I'm going to fast forward now, 2 years from now, not this year, but the next year, right? And you talk about a class of, you still got Madden Smiley, you got Chris Pohl, you got Micah Curtis, right? You got these young guys. You got these young guys that are coming in. You still got Neil Summers, a young group of guys. Can you see that class? I look 2 or 3 years out now too, right? Just like these guys got a 2-year commitment. These guys got a 2-year commitment. So let me see, like, if this class in 27, 28, how does that look? I'm really excited about that class too. They stick together. And so you try to build this for consistently winning championships, right? Not just flash in a pan 1 year. Really, really excited about our opportunity this year with this team. But you talk about adding like Mattia DeMartin's a sophomore. Like, now all of a sudden you start talking about a really, really big positional lineup again 2 years from now if those guys stick together. That's the flywheel. That's how we keep turning it around and keep competing consistently for championships. And that's what I want the state of Wyoming and all the cowboy and cowgirl fans out there to understand. Like, this isn't just one of those things where you look at it like, let's hope we get it this year, or let's really shoot for 1 year. Like, we got to consistently reinvest in our program. I haven't stopped working, right? Season got over mid-March, March 15th to the 20th, and we played our last game, and we've been recruiting. We didn't sign our last kid till May 15th. I mean, that was 2 months after the season. The season does not stop, and we crank it up here June 15th. So we go in a month again, and it starts again. And so, like, for all those people out there to think, it's vacation. There's never vacation time. There are no off days in this thing, man. And so we're lucky and blessed to run this race, and we got to run it as hard as we can, as fast as we can, as long as we can. But that's the fans, too. They get to enjoy this process. You guys are more involved now than ever. It's like you guys get to build your own franchise. How crazy is that? You're literally playing NBA 2K as a live person out there saying, if I invest in this program, I can make this roster better. You're talking about a chance now to impact winning at the, like literally on the front lines. We can recruit them because you helped us get them. Think about it. We can recruit certain guys because you helped invest in our program to go get those players. That's how wild this whole thing is. And it's an awesome opportunity for everybody.
It is. And speaking of looking into the future, when you have guys returning, you have some momentum coming off an NIT season, you're headed in the right direction. Obviously, it's always going to be hard to get teams to come to Laramie, but how do you approach the non-con schedule when you really are excited about your team and the possibilities and you know, trying to game the net, as you say?
Well, so gaming the net is now obsolete. So what I learned at our head coaches' meetings in the Mountain West is the WAB, right? You know, the wins against the bubble. That's what matters. And so if you're not out there, if you're still working to try to game the net, you're selling CDs out of the trunk of your car, right? Now we're on to the WAB. And they don't tell you these things. Like, you got to figure these things out. But, you know, if you're getting more wins against the bubble, so you got to schedule a certain way that doesn't really wins are great. That's all fine and dandy. But are they wins against teams that could be potential bubble teams, right? And if they're expanding the field, you get more opportunities to get wins against the bubble. Right. And so now it's like we're trying to game the WAB, right? This is it's just changing, man. The WAB, right? We got the net, we got the WAB, we got the RPI, whatever you want to call it. It's just all like they're moving the goalposts on us, right? And you got to stay up on this stuff. But I just, from our non-conference schedule, like, we're in a really good spot. And I can't give it all away. I'd steal, you know, Coach Seaman's thunder over here. But, you know, we got a bunch of like leveled opponents. We got a really good MTE that we're in. That's going to have A-10 teams and Valley teams. And, you know, those are the games you got to schedule. Americans, A-10s, Conference USAs. You'd like to go out there and get as many high majors that would play as possible, but it doesn't happen, right? They're avoiding us just as much as anybody is. They're avoiding us. They're being told not to schedule us. What would it do for them if they're playing a 20-game league schedule in the Big 10, Big 12, Big East, against really good quality opponents, to go out there and say, well, we got to do more of this in the non-conference. Some of those games will just be highlight games. It'll be Duke, Kentucky type stuff, you know, Kentucky, Gonzaga, where it's appeasing the masses. But none of those games are going to hurt those guys. They're only going to help them. You know, and so for us, we got to find games that don't hurt us. And we're going to have our bye games. That's what you get. But when it comes to our home and home series, we're still trying to play really good teams that have a good WAB or a net ranking. Because it's still predictive metrics at the start of the season. Nobody actually knows where people are going to be. No matter whatever algorithm tells you, like, you don't know until you start playing games. And so we're projecting that some of the teams we're playing are going to be pretty good. And last year, like, Austin Peay ended up being really good in their league, almost won their league. That was a good game for us. Those games matter. Sam Houston was a really good game. Obviously, they're returning to us this year, but that's going to be another good game for us at Sam Houston. And when you have that, and then hopefully, you know, you get the CSU game on the schedule here, you know, I wink, hopefully, you know, we're still working on that, but that's another really good game because that game should matter still. And that's a Pac-12 team versus a Mountain West team. And then you just try to find games of teams that, you know, hopefully when you get in this MTE, you can find teams that are like Wichita State, or, you know, you can like some of those teams where you get lucky playing at a neutral site that's not going to hurt you, but it's going to help you. And so scheduling in Laramie is always difficult, as you well know, but I think now, because we're a top 100 team, we put ourselves in a position, predictively in the metrics, to be a top 100 team. We're not getting so many people running away from the opportunity, just because I think this game now here can really help you. But it's also going to hurt your lungs, right? It's going to hurt your lungs. So as much as it could help them, it's going to hurt their lungs, and they don't want to come here anyways, Ryan.
All right. Well, Sonny, thanks for coming on the One Wyoming podcast. We appreciate you. Looking forward to this season, and hit them straight before then.
Hit them straight. I'll tell you what, like Nick Seaman's really counting on me here, man. He's really counting on me. Like that's my buddy over here, my scramble buddy. I got to be able to step up a little bit. And I'm a guy who plays golf, but I am not a golfer. All right. So tier high, let it fly, as they say.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe at Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. We will talk to you soon.
Go Pokes.